This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to BTBN's NBA Team Podcast. One of the super rare 2 weeks in a row stretches that we have here at night. One of your co-hosts here, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by Adam Murray. Adam, are you feeling fatigued that we have to talk to each other for two straight weekends?
No, as long as there's stuff to talk about, as if we're not just, you know, randomly like, whatever, basketball.
Well, we do that every now and then. You know, sometimes, you know, I mean, just to kind of peep. I mean, because we do, like we said before, we do actually plan these things out. We actually do prep work. But then there are some times where we literally go into a show like, listen, I don't know what we got. Let's just kind of like fly off the seat of our pants and see what we can. And we always, you know, because we – you know, we both have our own like ways of stretching things. We have a way of like getting an hour out of any episode that, you know, for whatever subjects or topics that we can think up, you know, NBA basketball related, sometimes non NBA related. You know, we have a couple of things that we can kind of tack on. But yeah, I think we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Adam will be out for the following week, so for the fans here, we wanted to give them something. You know, I can't just do the show on my own. I think that would get like record low view listenership. What do you think would be our? Let me ask you this: what do you think is our highest listened to show, and what is our lowest? Just make a guess.
Is there a real answer for this, or was it just?
I have no idea.
I don't know. I think our Gone Fishing episodes are usually...
Yeah, and the season previews. I think people like the season previews.
Because the week in, week out, doesn't really matter because, you know, nothing really for the most part, unless there's some big news. It's like, they played for 2 weeks. We could talk about this. We could talk about that. But
yeah,
usually the season wrap-ups, I think, are stuff that we really pay attention to and... I would say the draft, but we've sort of horribly missed on that.
Yeah, but the draft though is actually probably the one where we do our best homework, where we really go in and we actually do our due diligence. Whereas a lot of times in the regular season, there's so many games. Like I was looking at the Martin Luther King Day schedule, and there were just so many games. I barely saw half the highlights from that game. Obviously everyone tuned in to watch the Cavaliers go to Golden State to finish their West Coast road trip, and they got just absolutely steamrolled by the Warriors in their rematch from the Christmas Day game. But after that, I mean. All I can do sometimes is just glance at highlights. You know, you got your regular, you know, everybody's got their real life workday, you know, things to do, their daily tasks, their daily, you know, their daily responsibilities. And so you can't watch every game. You can get League Pass for free, which they offered this past weekend or this past week, actually. And you can watch as many games as you can, but it's very, very difficult. I'll tell you one that I did see. I saw the Pelicans give up 143 points to the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I do not know. It was one of the most WTF games that the Pelicans have had, and they've had quite a few because they're not a great team. They're just weird. It is just it's a team where the moment it seems like things are getting going, they have like two losses in a row, and you're sort of down on them again. And then Anthony Davis has another fantastic game against a good team where they win the game, and you're feeling good about them again. And it's just one of those things like one step forward, two steps back. So that's just been the story of the Pelicans. But, boy, giving up that many points. I know the Brooklyn Nets take a lot of threes. They run the fastest pace in the league. But to give up that many points against a really awful team like Brooklyn is just bad. It's very bad.
Yeah, but they were hitting everything. That's the thing.
Yeah, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, our boy, got a huge dunk over – I don't remember who it was for the Pelicans. It may have been Solomon Hill. But it was a pretty wicked dunk. Yeah, you know, but it was a fairly eventful week this week. So, you know, the timing actually kind of works. We do have a lot of things that we can talk about. We want to do mid-season grades, mid-season maybe awards if we have enough time. I also wanted to get your thoughts at the end of the show about the Ice Cube 3-on-3 league because I think you weren't a huge fan of it, but I wanted to ask you why. Let's kind of get started here with the mid-season stuff. Just to kind of – and what we're going to do is because me and – Adam talked about this before, about, you know, there's a lot of shows that do things differently. Some of them, they'll just go through an ad nauseum list of all the teams and try to go super detailed, super super duper breakdowns, and go literally hours into these midseason grades and reports. We wanted to kind of do it rapid fire with the grades. It's not like we're trying to skim over like a lot of the important things about these teams or like the minutia, and we'll get a chance to talk about it. But I feel like it'll make this show a little more entertaining if we just kind of like give our grade, give a quick reason, then just move on. So
basically, you're saying you didn't do your homework and you're just trying to skate by on this.
No, I told you we're not trying to skim by this. I'm saying that we're smart.
Then why
enough
don't
to
you just
it.
Say how do they pass the, you know, the sniff test? Do they look good? Do they look not? How do they look? Not the we could get into the numbers and so and so is
this one, yeah.
So and so on opposite Tuesdays is +35, and this lineup is, you know.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of real plus minus when it comes to lineups? Like, I'll ask you this because I was looking at some of the advanced metrics with the post plus minus for the lineups, and one of the best lineups was a Bulls lineup that had Jerian Grant as the point guard instead of Rajon Rondo. Now Rondo's obviously having his internal issues with the Bulls and with Fred Hoiberg, so Jerian Grant's getting more minutes, so maybe that's why the lineup with him in it has been more effective in terms of the minutes he's played. But like, does that necessarily mean like that you need to have that Jerian Grant is like that essential to the Bulls' success, or do you think some of them are sample size issues?
I think a lot of them are sample size issues where it's just the same thing that, you know, you tend to buy into sometimes. Like, well, if this person's great in 10 minutes a game, well, therefore he must be good in 36 minutes, or, oh, well, he came in and, or, you know, Jerian Grant came in and let's say, you know, Butler hit 2 threes. Oh, well, he's +6. And then, well, that was the end of the quarter, so we took him out and, oh, his plus minus is through the roof. And sometimes you buy into advanced stats a little too much sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, his three-point shooting, well, he's a 40% shooter if he's wide open, but he's only a 20% shooter with a hand in his face. Well, then he's just a really shitty shooter. Then, mm-hmm. you know, he's just just an open space. It's just you could buy into it a little too much.
Yeah, and like, for example, like the Lowry – I think we've talked about this in a previous episode, the Lowry plus bench, which is the one that has Lowry at the two as the off two, Corey Joseph, Terrence Ross, Patrick Patterson, Lucas Bebe Nogueira, they have been like fierce at the start of the second and fourth quarter of games, just killing teams, while that you still have a really effective plus-minus lineup of to start the game with Valanciunas and DeMar DeRozan and Damari Carroll, and I think the guy that they start a lot is Pascal Siakam. Is that right?
He's now out of the lineup pretty much.
Okay. They plugged in? Pirtle, Sullinger?
I don't know. They've just been toying with different lineups lately.
But that Lowry plus one is like instantaneously effective. It's one of those ones that even if you're not a fan of advanced metrics, you can't lie that when you start the second and fourth quarters against the Raptors, you got to be ready. And if you play your bench guys to start them, they're gonna kill you.
So. Yeah, that's and the same thing they had, you know, I was watching the Celtics game, obviously. And they're like, oh, well, Jay Crowder leads the NBA in three-point shooting in the first quarter. It's like, mm-hmm. well, what does that mean? Nobody even really tries in the first quarter. They're just getting warmed up. So it's just,
yeah,
you know, you could break everything down to minute to minute to minute. And
yeah,
this is just, you know, to get back on topic, this is just the overall, does this team look good? How do they, you know, from an A to an F, does it look like they did good in all their, you know, millions of dollars they spent on research and evaluations, and mm-hmm. this is what they came up with.
Yeah, I'll give you two teams that have plus minuses with different lineups that have like almost the exact same effectiveness. I wanted to try to kind of gauge which one you think is like the better option. But we're gonna get to those as we get to the teams. I'm gonna let you, since you actually have the stuff written down, I'm gonna let you sort of take it away with the teams, and I'll give you a grade and you give me yours, unless you want to go back and forth.
No, I will field this for you.
Okay.
All right. Starting off, obviously, Atlanta.
Atlanta, I would give a B-. You know, the Korver trade sort of hurt them in terms of their offensive effectiveness, started hot early with a weak schedule like you always been talk about on the show, skidded down, made the trade, did not do the trade with Paul Millsap. Now their offense is back and kind of not firing, but, you know, a little bit more effective. Dwight Howard feels a little bit more involved, which is always good for Dwight and the team. So I just said B minus, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I feel safe saying that. They're still good, though.
See, and after the Korver trade, they proceed to go on an 8-2 run, strangely enough, so that doesn't really make any
and
sense.
And it's not like Korver was bad for them. It's just that when things are different and you're forced to use different lineups, sometimes they're more effective than you expect because opposing teams aren't used to having to play against those lineups.
See, I gave him a little lower. I gave him a C+ just because I don't know who this team is, and I don't know if they know who this team wants to be. Mm-hmm. And are we going to start to try to tank? Well, we're better than horrible teams. They're currently, you know, a safe fourth right now. But then again, everyone below them sort of is terrible.
Well, some other teams like the Bucks and have been kind of faltering. The Knicks just, oh man.
So it's just, what kind of team is this? Dwight Howard, how much of a cornerstone is he anymore? Millsap, well, what are we doing with him? He doesn't seem eager to re-sign real quick.
But he's having another really good year. So.
Yeah, he's always efficient, and Tim Hardaway Jr. has been stepping up, and Schroeder's been good, as we all expected. But it's just, you know, okay, well, what are they going to do when the shooting time comes, and what's going to happen when people stop being soft against them?
Do you think they have to make a move at point guard? Do you think Malcolm Delaney is still a sustainable backup, despite the numbers looking good for him in the early going?
Well, who do they have for backups? Who's their bench period?
Well, I'm just talking about guard. Are you just talking about the team in general?
The team in general really doesn't have that strong of a bench.
Mike Dunleavy had the really crazy game when he came back from the trade, you know, and how many threes did he make in the game? It was like 8 or like 5, maybe 6.
Something, but he's not going to sustain that, nor is he, and he's going to be, you know, he doesn't want to be there, he already said, so.
Yeah, true.
This is just a tryout before they cut him and, you know, he signs for a contender at the end. But it's, like I said, I don't know what this team is. That's why C+, because we all saw, like, this, you know, the team was getting older. They have to do something. Well, we're not going to do something. And then now you can see sort of the wheels starting to come off. But I don't know how they're going to pull it together. But you are a little higher on them. All right, moving next to Boston.
Boston, I'd give a B, just a straight B. Isaiah Thomas should be an all-star reserve. I wasn't shocked that he didn't make the all-star starters list, but he'll definitely be in. His fourth quarter numbers are ridiculous. In terms of assists, he doesn't really give off the ball in the fourth quarter, but when you have a guy that good offensively that can just get you a basket anytime you want, that's incredibly valuable. That's like Steph Curry level valuable. The team is, you know, really good offensively. Rebounding is still an issue. Al Horford had a stop and start because of the injury. He has those games where he's really good. Then he has some games where he's not all there. It seems like they're still trying to fit in all the parts. And it's also stop and start in the standings, where it seems like they're kind of climbing. They're sort of challenging the Raptors. And then they have a loss like they did against Portland in a really good game in overtime that they lost at a home on Saturday. So you don't know really what's going on with the Celtics yet, but you know they're a good team. You know, I'd say they're better than Atlanta, you know, so I'd give them a B.
See, I gave them a B- because they're just terrible on defense and they can't rebound for anything. If Avery Bradley's, like, you know, pretty much your top rebounder, you really don't have much going for you. They're just a jump shooting team. Yeah. And, you know, especially with Al Horford, okay, yeah, he wants to shoot threes. The spacing is great, but you have nobody, you know, Linux is stretch five. There's no traditional just big Amir Johnson, just, you know.
Yeah,
he's...
their guard and their wing spots are okay. They're so good at the, you know, and the spots that Jaylen Brown can barely get playing time. And Jaylen Brown's actually pretty good. You know, even Terry Rozier is pretty good as a second-year player. It's like you're saying, it's that paint-touch stuff that they have trouble with, you know?
Yeah, it's just, you could go, they try to go small ball, but this team is just so small, you have really, you just get out-rebounded. You know, they lost to the Knicks, and the rebounding margin was crazy. And
now, their field goal percentage defense is good, but I give a lot of credit there to Marcus Smart, who's able to guard multiple positions.
Yeah, they're great on the ball, but it's just, you know, like I said, if you can't rebound, you can't really do anything. So I gave them just a B-. Next up, Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, actually, I'd give them a D+. because even though they're terrible, and they are, you know, they decided to sort of subscribe to this, like, to the super duper fast pace, since it's like, okay, if we're going to lose, we're going to lose in style, giving a lot more three pointers to guys that may not deserve it, even though Brook Lopez's offensive numbers have been really, really, really good, you know, to try to maybe boost his trade value if you're being a conspiracy theorist. But Brooklyn has played better against good teams than people would normally expect. They have absolutely been routed in certain games. I think they were the team that gave up 150 points to the Warriors, if I stand corrected. But in terms of the team's effectiveness, they're a team that's just they're scrappy offensively. Offensively, they could score way more points than you think. We just talked about what they did to the Pelicans. So as terrible as they are, and they are, I wouldn't call them, like, unwatchably bad. So I gave them a D+.
See, this is where I disagree. I gave them a solid B.
Okay.
Because they were supposed to be the worst team of all time and just horrible to watch. And then it's like, well, you know what? Hollis Jefferson, Caris LeVert, they look like nice little pieces that you could work on, and they're not just giving up. And like when Philly was in the process, it was just god awful to watch, and there was no redeeming value to it.
This is not the process. This is one where, and here's the sad thing, is that it's not the Philadelphia 76ers had certain luxuries in terms of draft picks and prospects to get better, and they didn't. But for the Brooklyn Nets, they're stuck because they had they traded all those draft picks to Boston years ago. So they really are in a really bad place in terms of their leverage to get better with younger players. They have to make work what they have.
There's a difference between a bad team who's just bad and, you know, physically can't win because they don't have the talent, who's really trying hard, and then just a team like, let's say, you know, Philly or, you know, those who are just in tank mode. It's like, yeah, we're just going to play bums because we don't want to win because we need more lottery ping pong balls and
yes.
We don't care about development. Whereas this, it's like, hey, you know what? Let's give LeVert 20 minutes now, and now that he's back, Kilpatrick and Isaiah Whitehead. Jerry Lynn's been out. Has he been out? Has he even played?
He's
this
been
season?
Out for the. He's played, but very, very sparingly. I think he just recently came back.
Yeah, so they're doing this all without him. And if you get, you know, you move on from Brook Lopez, which is probably your best bet.
I think in the off season of 2017 would be the best bet with Brook Lopez being traded. You know,
so
I think they're gonna man it out this season with them.
That's why it's an A for effort situation with them. So that's why I gave them a. Plus the players, you know, all the off season, the people they've signed, all the teams, you know, matched. So that's not a bad thing. As opposed to, you know, I'm gonna overpay you. No, you go. We want to distance ourselves as quick as we can.
Yeah. So, and Trevor Booker's actually played well.
That means they're making, you know, solid steps for, you know, the front offices, and we're just going to pay bad contracts, and, well, we're just going to give anybody the highest money because we need to pay somebody. They're trying. All right.
Yeah, a perfect example, just to finish it, is the Sean Kilpatrick game against the Clippers. Like, it's not something that's sustainable, but in those very small moments, it's like, oh, wow, they actually care. They're playing hard, you know?
Yeah, they're supposed to be at the bottom. They're supposed to have the fewest wins, which they do. They have 9 wins. The next closest team has 14.
Yeah, they're by far the worst records.
Yeah, which, look at that roster. Yeah, you can see that, but they're trying.
Yes, okay.
All right, moving on. Charlotte.
Charlotte, I would give them just, I'll take that. I'll say C+. You know, they've been good. They're treading 500, which is what a lot of people expected. Some people expected them to go well over, like maybe 10 games over by this point. Like more of like a, in terms of plus minus, like a guaranteed good team, like a guaranteed playoff team. I still have some reservations about Charlotte as a playoff team, whether they're actually going to make it or not. Kemba Walker has been an all-star level player. We'll see if he makes it. People will find out between now and our next episode. And Nick Batum, shooting wise, has been pretty poor. You know, I don't know if it has to do with him kind of resting on his laurels now that he's got that that max level contract. Cody Zeller, he's played well. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is back from injury. He's up and down like he always is, because offensively he's so challenged. But overall, they have these stretches where they just play really, really poorly. Their defense is not engaged, which probably drives Steve Clifford, the head coach, insane, because that's his calling card. But they are good when they're totally in, like, buying in. So I would give them, like, a C+.
Which is funny, because maybe I've just been a little more generous, because I gave them a solid B, because although they completely, you know, the bench was gutted last year, mm-hmm. or in the offseason, they've managed to come back. They're still playing solid defense. Kemba Walker, as we said, is carrying that team. And the fact that they're, you know, currently in the playoff hunt, and, you know, right now they're in sixth spot, and it's all close.
Yeah, and it's all kind of like a wish-wash because of Chicago and because of, you know, and because of some other teams with losing records that have the potential to climb up depending on certain circumstances.
And that's, you know, they want to sort of be in the thick of things, and the fact that they are, I think, is a good thing for them. So
yeah, Marvin Williams, got to get more out of him. Marco Bellinelli's been a surprise. Frank Kaminsky, you and I are both not fans. He's one of those guys who, if he's good offensively, the team's playing well. If he's bad offensively, the team's going to lose, you know.
You have... It's like we swap positions on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm actually
like
defending him. You're trying to, you know, get.
I wanted to go sort of to the B level, but here's the problem. Every time I want to like, I always find myself wanting to like them because they're when I watch them and I'm like, okay, let's see if they can, you know, have one of those really good performances, and then you watch them, and they're terrible. But then again, they just had that really good win against Toronto at home. They've had a couple of really solid wins against good teams. Their home court's pretty good. It's a good team. It is a good team. I just don't know how good they can really be. I don't know what their peak is. Like, I think their peak is lower than most of the other East teams.
Their peak is, like, fifth place.
Exactly.
They're not, you know... Exactly. That's sort of the problem, is they sort of peaked out what they possibly... Chicago.
Oh. C-. C-, like, just hovering around D.
I agree with you, and that mine was a very generous C-.
Give me yours, and I'll kind of give you mine.
Well, the coaching situation just doesn't appear to have gotten better at all. First, you know, you try to get rid of Jimmy Butler. No, he's the cornerstone of our team. You sort of single-handedly alienate every player on that team sort of one by one. Mm-hmm. The, you know, not the Rondo situation, and Dwayne Wade's like, yeah, I don't know if I want to re-sign here if you get rid of Jimmy Butler. Mirotić, you sort of marginalize.
Yeah.
Carter Williams, he came back. That's sort of a bright point that you can, you know, just send Rondo down.
Well, he's
down.
Played well since coming back from the injury to the point that Rajon Rondo was able to be sat. So that was
You can sit Rondo. And then it's just, you know, bizarre things. The curious case of Bobby Porter and just never playing. And then was it Paul Zipster I saw got a start last week?
Yeah, he did. Where did he come from? He played a lot of minutes against the Kings over the weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, why? What is going on with your roster configurations?
Yeah, the two bright spots I'd say outside of maybe Doug McDermott playing slightly better is that at a starter's level is that Jimmy Butler has had a crazy good season. He's probably one of the 10 best players in the league right now. He was an all-star starter selection. And the other one is Taj Gibson in the contract year has actually played really solid. You know, when a lot of people expected him to sort of like tune out because of the fact that they were doing so much changeover in the front court and he would wind up being traded as an asset. So,
you know, maybe
he's still an asset.
I don't know. Cause you sort of, they did this patchwork deal to keep the team competitive, and you could just see that, you know, the tape is starting to come off the sides, and the glue is starting to, you know, crack through, and it's just like, I don't really know what this team is going to, you know, in 2-3 years, this team is going to look pretty bad.
Yeah, down in terms of long term, it's super messy for them. I get a very Brooklyn Netsy vibe out of them in terms of down the road if they don't make the right decisions, and you know, if they don't cut their ties pretty quickly, not necessarily from Wade, but from other parts of the team. So, moving on, what you got?
Cleveland. How do they not get an A?
I mean, did you watch the ABC game where they lost in overtime to the Spurs? Kawhi had 41 points. Any concerns?
No.
What about the Golden State blowout? Was that end of a West Coast road trip?
Golden State. I also said, you know, they're not really, you know, it was more on Golden State to be, you know, we need to show them. And just that, you know, that strange check by Draymond Green where it was just completely, did LeBron flop? Yes.
It was flopperific a little bit, yeah.
But was it necessary to go and just completely check them? It was... You know, Draymond just doesn't do any favors for himself.
Well, Draymond is sort of in that Kevin Garnett vibe of, like, if it's a 50-50, if it's a 50-50 thing where you have enough of a reasonable doubt that you can at least, like, consider it a judgment move, or, like, it can be second-guessed as I was just playing basketball, then he will take a shot at you. You know, he's just one of those kinds of asshole type of players.
Yeah, it was a flop, but it was an asshole move that was really unnecessary to do, and every other week is just, yeah, I'm becoming less and less of a fan. And
yeah, well, that's the flail thing. Like, a lot of people make the judgment of, well, you know, if you jump in the air, like, as a regular human being, and somebody tries to block your shot, well, your natural inclination is to, like, kick your legs out. Well, yeah, but if you're sitting on the ground like you were against Steven Adams and you kick the guy right in the jewels, that's not a basketball move. That's just you being a dick.
It's just, you know, one move after the next. You could get doubt for so long, and seems like every other episode we have now to, what did Draymond do stupid this week? That, you know, what did he say? And the CBA, he was the only one who was bitching about it, how it was horrible. Everyone's like, yes, this is good, we have peace in the NBA, we have stability. Draymond, this is horrible.
Yes. Like when the flail rule got put in, it's like, oh yeah, they had to make that rule for me. It's like, no, they made that rule because it's a dick move and you're not supposed to do it. You know, it's that's the reason why. You're just the first one to do it, is all. But yeah, in terms of Cleveland, playing really well. You know, Kyle Korver's gonna, you know, they got to nudge him in a little bit. You know, kind of like they did with J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert when they got brought in there from New York. Might take a couple of months. By the time you get to the playoffs, they'll be fine. LeBron James, he's not having his best year in terms of efficiency or in terms of scoring average, or even all the other averages, but that's how he is.
It's irrelevant till the playoffs start. And the same exactly. Thing. Oh, they got blown out by Golden State at Golden State. Yeah, but J.R. Smith wasn't playing, and he can change the game, which I never thought I'd say. But all right, now let's get to the depressing sides. Okay. Dallas.
I'd probably just go with a straight F. You know, I know a lot of people like certain things out of Dallas that they see. I saw Wesley Matthews got that game winner against the Bulls. Harrison Barnes has played well as a starting wing, like kind of a go-to wing. Dirk Nowitzki, age-wise, is, like, nearing done. Like, would you call him done or kind of, like, close to done?
He is kind of done. See, I gave Dallas a D+. I did not give an F. I didn't give any Fs out. Because, number one, you can't fault a team for, you know, Dirk was out because he was sick at the beginning.
Yeah, they were not physically capable of being at the level that they could be competitive.
Yeah, number two, the West is so bad, they are only four games out of the nine spot.
Which is a miracle.
So they get a D because just the roster is really terrible. Harrison Barnes, he could be a cornerstone piece. Wesley Matthews, still very solid. It's just the problem is there's no other – anyone outside of, you know, Dorian Finney-Smith.
Finney Smith.
Of him, there's no young developmental anything. So you just have this really old roster that's going to get really even worse. But
and J.J. Barea is out again with the hip injury. This time he'll be out for, like, at least a month, I heard.
And that just goes with the feast or famine that Dallas is free agency. Is, we need to go for the best guy. If we don't get the best guy, well, we have no backup plan.
Yes.
Yeah, Harrison Barnes, great piece. But if you had, you know, you look at other teams, yeah, let's just get solid. You know, let's work on our bench. Let's get a fourth man. Let's get a third man. Where they're just like, nope, we're going to get somebody really good, or we're just going to, you
know,
hope Dirk's
they're too old. And in their youth movement, you know, they may have struck out in the draft in the small portions that they had. Like, Shane Larkin didn't work out. They moved him, you know, years ago.
Traded down three times and then took Shane Larkin because he was the cheapest choice and then got rid of him immediately because, we don't want that.
And then the one guy that they did retain because they realized they had to get a little younger was Justin Anderson. He's had a really bad second year. So
he really regressed, and you were high on him too.
Yeah, out of Virginia. He had a good first year. Remember, he was sort of like the defensive dude for them when they played the Thunder in the playoffs. He was the guy, he was the playmaker, you know. So for him to sort of step, you know, have a step back like that was very surprising. You would expect in the second year for some rookies to really, to kind of make, to kind of step through and do better. It worked in the opposite for Justin Anderson. It's not just about Anderson, though. There's a lot of other places with Dallas where you know, their defense. I mean, they're bad defensively, but offensively is the problem. They are like dead last in everything. That's been the biggest problem. Their scoring average in terms of points per possession. I mean, they are just dead last in all of it.
So. Yeah, and that's just, again, bad roster management. So can't fault injuries, so they get a solid D plus. Denver.
Yes. Denver, I'd give probably like a I'd probably give a B plus. Because even though they are a losing team right now, they are in the thick of the thick of it for the eighth spot in the West, which almost everyone is right now because of just the way it's set up. They have been pretty competitive. They've had some really bad stretches every now and then. Specifically, I think at the beginning of December they were really really struggling. But a lot of things to look forward to. Have you seen Nikola Jokic in the last week?
Jokic has been good, and he's marginalized Nurkic from the Jokic-Nurkic combination. I gave them an incomplete.
Okay.
Because
we don't know. They need to do something. Okay.
This is just the Orlando of 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, and Minnesota's just, we have all this young talent. We don't have superstars, but we just have players, and they need to do something, and they have to really sort of do some sort of trade deadline move to move somebody around to set up a core, because it seems like every two or three games there's a new rotation in there.
But I don't want them to do what Sacramento is thinking and thinking, well, we're one move away. Like that's the unreasonable type of logic that really hurts a team, where they go for a star when they can trade assets like Danilo Gallinari, Kenneth Faried. Those are the two names that everyone talks about in the trade waters for Denver.
See, but there's been a little Faried resurgence too, and him and Jokic playing together have been really good. And then there's sometimes you see Gallinari's playing the four.
Yeah, because the one thing that's been really, really inconsistent about Denver, which is what I've been afraid of, is minutes distribution. Like they don't have a completely reliable like system in terms of, okay, this guy starts, these guys come in the second, this is the sixth man. There's just not been that kind
that
of...
That is exactly. That is the problem, which I was going to give him initially a C- because of that. It's just you have zero rotation. Mm-hmm. You have no bench. You just have literally 13 guys who are all going to get minutes. And you can't
Gary
have
Harris
that.
Had the injury to start. When he came in, they plugged him in back as the starter, which is what they initially wanted. You know, Moutier starts, and I think they still like Moutier. I wouldn't give up on him yet. You know, even though it's a very rich point guard class in the draft coming up, but I wouldn't just totally give up on Moutier from the jump, you know?
See, and this is where advanced stats come in, because advanced stats say he's the worst player of all time still, and it's just like, well, mm-hmm. I don't really see it. It's just this roster is so mishmashy, and then you don't have, like I said, you don't have any core, period. So every week it says, well, all right, is Faried my four? Is Gallinari my four? Is Jokic my four? Those are three completely different players with three completely different systems and strategies to go with it. So,
and then there are the games. And then the games, you know, they're fairly competitive. Offensively, they're really, really good. You know, defensively is obviously an issue with a team that's that kind of disjointed chemistry-wise. But in terms of talent, they're actually really good. You know,
and the amazing thing as of right now, currently the eighth spot in the West if the season was canceled right now.
They're sort of fighting the Nuggets, the Kings right now for that spot, right?
The Portland Trailblazers, yes. Pelicans, Kings, Timberwolves.
Yeah, like T-Wolves I would count out despite the statistical reality that they could make it. You know,
Dallas tied for the bottom, only five games out.
Oh, man. So, what we got now?
Yeah, that's just... It's just the West is just really bad. And speaking of bad, we have just Jekyll and Hyde at Detroit.
Can we pick one half and the other half? If we have to go in totality, I'll just give them a straight C. Good team when they really are there. They were so thunderstruck by the Reggie Jackson injury. You know, that was a big, big blow to them. Ish Smith, while competitive, was not a completely effective point guard filling in for Jackson. But when he came back, they started to play better. They dipped right in the middle of that, and then you heard about the rumored trade where they were going to do a straight swap for with Reggie Jackson and Ricky Rubio between Detroit and Minnesota. All of a sudden, Detroit starts playing better. They had that tip in by Marcus Morris over his brother Markieff against the Wizards. Kind of felt like sort of a can you call that like a galvanizing win, something that you can kind of rally around?
I don't know, because when they come back, it's just one game they look really good. The next game they come back and look extremely terrible.
Mm-hmm.
The, with what you mentioned, Reggie Jackson came back, and they are just an awful team with him on defense.
Yes, that's true.
I don't know what is wrong.
The KCP injury hurt them too, because that was a glue guy for them.
I don't know what is wrong with them, but with Reggie Jackson, but also Reggie for Rubio straight up might be. I don't think there's a thing as a lose-lose trade.
That would be one. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what a lose-lose trade was. It was Detroit and Orlando last year when they traded Jennings for Jennings and Ersan Ilyasova for well, you know what? It was Tobias Harris, so that was actually a win for Detroit. So I have to take that back.
Yeah, that was a complete win for Detroit, and then,
That's true.
You know, we could talk about other questionable signings and the contracts given out by Stan Van, but like I said, just complete Jekyll and Hyde team. I don't think anybody knows what they are or what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, they're just strange.
And Andre Drummond just hasn't taken that leap. Like, even DeAndre Jordan took a leap defensively, where it's like, okay, he's a real threat. He can really ruin your day without the help of Chris Paul or Blake Griffin sometimes. Andre Drummond has just not reached that level yet.
I don't know if he can or will, or I don't know the word I'm looking for here, but can he, how far can he go? Because you have Markieff Morris, or one of the Morrises. Marcus Morris.
Mm-hmm.
He's there, so you can't, you have to play next to him. So with, you know, like you said, with Blake Griffin and everyone else who makes a leap, they usually have space, but Drummond is confined to his literal area because of everyone around. Tobias has to be where he is because of his size and sort of tweener status. Morris has to be where he is because of his size and his tweener status.
Yeah, and Stan Van has always like prided himself on having good field goal percentage teams, and they have just been so bad field goal percentage-wise since he's been there. They just have not made – they've made marked improvements, but they're still like in the lower half. And that's – I think that's a huge problem, whereas even though Stan is the team that put together, and I heard he had sort of a come to Jesus moment with the owner where the owner had to give him the vote of the dreaded vote of confidence. But it feels like even though Stan Van put the team together, that Van Gundy's still not getting what he wants out of the team efficiency wise.
So. Yeah, because the owner said he wants to max out Caldwell Pope, and it's just like, no.
It would be a bad move. And maybe that was the disagreement, that he didn't think it was a good idea.
So. All right, Golden State, how do they not get an A?
A, yeah. Now, A+, I would pass. You know, we're talking about like the overachieving class guy that like is like he gets the 99.5, but he wants the A+, but you can't because it's not 100. It's kind of like that thing. Because you know the problem with two things with the Warriors that worry me is that you play that really fast pace, so you're going to turn the ball over a lot, which is occasional, but they turn the ball over like frequently. They're like 25th in the league in turnovers. The other thing is their crunch time offense in close games in the fourth quarter is dreadful. You know, they have a lot of problems really patching together good offense against really good teams in the fourth quarter.
They're just a jump shooting team, and that's all they possibly could be.
But they don't know who needs to take the jump shot. That's the problem.
And if somebody gets a little bit cold, well then, you know, that sort of cools off the entire team. There's just no... like I said, they could be soft, but again, we expected them to be completely dominant. Oh, look, they're completely dominant. So just simple A and...
Yeah, and just kind of move along. But, you know, and also really good week there where they blew out the Cavs. They pretty easily beat the Thunder, even though they're your typical pyrotechnics emotionally with Westbrook versus Durant, blah, blah, blah. And then they blew out the Rockets in Houston. So good week for them. So.
Yep, moving on to Houston.
Houston A+. I didn't think they'd be as good as they are. You know, and I mean, to be just to kind of put it really simply so we can kind of like move along. Harden is just having a career year. The 3-point shooting, the team has completely embraced it, have the personnel to match with it. They even had the Clint Capella injury. They got over that quickly because Montrezl Harrell came in and played well. And also Nene, who's been is sort of steady. I've even seen Sam Decker play more in front of Corey Brewer, which was a very smart move because Brewer plus minus wise is terrible. So efficiency wise, fantastic. Defensively, I still have issues with their shot blocking, how many points they give up, but still a fantastic team. Way better than I thought they'd be.
Yes, and the return of Patrick Beverley helped them as well.
Yes. Yes.
That was just Eric Gordon, okay, be the sixth man, come in, shoot, no pressure, and you're not a hero. He has embraced that role. So yes, agreed.
Eric Gordon, sixth man of the year.
Yeah. I would put him up there.
Yeah. Because he basically comes off the bench, correct?
He doesn't start.
Exactly. I'd have to think he's sixth man of the year at 17 a game or near 18 a game. So.
All right. Indiana.
C. Straight C. I will say this. That roster that they have, the starting lineup that they had, that a lot of people were like, well, just because you put all these good offensively talented teams together doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have the same effectiveness, is that when they took Monte Ellis out because he had some injuries, then they put in Teague, Thaddeus Young, Miles Turner, Al Jefferson, and Paul George, that lineup has been incredibly effective compared to the others. So maybe they found something there where maybe Ellis needs to sort of be either traded or sort of isolated into a six-man role where he can be more effective. But the Pacers are good when their defense is even somewhat effective. The problem is their defense is so bad that you just don't know what to expect out of them.
I gave them pass because they're just so pass fail. like they're just the definition of just the most they're a team in the NBA. They are.
But so you're saying it's one of those team, like one of those students that's like close to failing, but you see he's trying and you see
they're not
effort
close
there
to failing. It's
just like,
you know, they're there and it's just like, well, you're not moving the needle in any direction. You made this coaching change and really nothing exciting has happened. You got Thaddeus Young, who's good. You mentioned the defensive just awfulness.
The only thing defensively they were able to continue from the Vogel years is the 3-point percentage defense, which I would have to give a lot of credit to the fact that, you know, Thaddeus Young can close out, and Paul George is such a good defensive small forward that he can guard basically from like one to four anybody who tries to kick out for threes. But do you think that it was a mistake trying to push that pace up, because they're up in adjusted pace, but it doesn't feel like they can sustain the effectiveness?
No, not really. And the same thing as Paul George is a power forward, also didn't sustain long either.
Another Larry Bird idea, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, I like the novel attempt of, you know, small ball is the new ball, and okay, he's now our four, we could put three guards around him, but it's just, no, that's not happening. And, you know, I think they're 500, and it's just unexciting. Yeah, they're just everything.
They're a playoff team, I'll say that. I think they are a playoff team.
Yeah, they're a playoff team, but just nobody.
Yeah, I agree with you.
All right, now we move to the Clippers.
Okay, now we're getting a little bit of excitement here. Obviously got a horrible break from the Chris Paul injury when he was guarding Russell Westbrook in that Martin Luther King Day game on TNT against the Thunder. Chris Paul, in terms of his real plus minus as an individual player, was like sky high. He was by far the most important player to his team, if you look at those metrics. So you knew without him they would struggle, and they are. They lost to the Timberwolves. They lost to the Nuggets, which take for what it is. Blake Griffin has said that he will go on their road trip and it will rejoin the team. I don't know what that necessarily means, that he will be playing. I would assume so, because it's more of a panic move now that Paul's going to be out for, I think it's up to 6 to 8 weeks, right? With the thumb surgery.
6 to 8 weeks, and they're just, yeah, that's
Really great start to the for the team. I mean, they were like on a record pace in terms of defensively. Their bench unit was playing a lot better than people expected to start the season. Now it's kind of gone back to the median, and now their starters are like super relied on to kind of like contribute. And the Blake injury, and then add on to that the Paul injury, and you have a 29-16 team.
And yeah, I just gave them a solid C because it's just they are who we thought they are. They're continuing to be made out of glass, and someone get injured, and then oh, now there's sudden. Now we need Austin Rivers for 30 minutes. Now we need Wesley Johnson for 30 minutes. It's like, well, no.
Do you now think age? Do you think age? Their average age has backfired on them.
But they're not an old team.
They're fairly old in terms of experience. They're one of the most experienced teams.
Well, yeah, they're one of the most experienced. The experience core, the starting group, they've been they've been together for
That's I'll say this, that's one where the Toronto Raptors can kind of fool you, because when they look at youngest teams in terms of age of average, it looks like the Raptors are one of the youngest, but they're really not. Like, their core is very experienced. It's because they have so much youth behind the core, you know.
Exactly. It's just, you know, we don't, you know, Doc Rivers doesn't believe in draft picks. We never draft anybody, and we just wind up getting any retread 36-year-old.
Yeah,
so it's just the GM of Doc Rivers, the GM, continues to get Fs, but the Doc Rivers, the coach, seems to pull out a solid, you know, A-, B+.
Yeah, I don't think I gave him a grade. I would give him probably a B, a straight B. I feel like they played pretty hard this year. You know, even though they haven't won all the games. So.
All right, the Los Angeles Lakers.
I give them a C-. Defensively, they are still god-awful, even though you do see improvement in the post-Kobe era. A lot of it has to do with the fact that D'Angelo Russell went down with the plasma surgery, and now he hurt his knee again, so they got to reevaluate him again. Lou Williams played really well. Julius Randle miraculously has 2 triple-doubles. I think he's been undervalued going into the season. He's starting to show his worth as a number – I think he was a number 6 pick or number five pick. Yeah, 7th pick back in that 2014 draft. He was pick right around the same time as Marcus Smart, and which is funny because in terms of effectiveness, I feel like they're very similar. Like, they're a great part to your system, but they're very like they're X factors, you know. But in terms of the team in general, offensively much better. Luke Walton was a very good choice at head coach. You could see sort of the team is sort of rallying around him. They like what he wants to do with the team, but defensively, oh, I can't get over how bad they are.
I might have been a little happy with the grades. I gave them a B-/C+ because we expected them to be another worst team of all time. And the fact that they're sitting there with like 15 or 16 wins right now, I don't think anybody expected that. I think that was supposed to be their season total. And they've played better than a lot of people have expected. And with, you know, not the curious off-signing contracts notwithstanding, you've seen play the, again, the difference between the two coaches is, well, last year, well, I refused to play my rookies because they need to learn, as opposed to, yeah, let's get them all minutes. I've seen a Vika Zubac out of nowhere all of a sudden.
Is Byron Scott the worst head coach in NBA history?
No, there's
worse ones, you'd say. He did go to 2 NBA finals, but I give him almost none of the credit, to be honest with you.
I don't say he's a terrible coach. It's just one of those. He's one of those coaches where the times changed, but he refused to change with them.
Also, quietly sort of gaining ground in the rookie race, Brandon Ingram playing a lot better.
You know? No, he is nowhere
He's
near
not
the...
close to that level. He's not like an NBA level, but what I'm saying is that kind of like being better, being more of an impact player for them.
No, from the talk of, well, you know, they should pick Ingram over Simmons, and he's, you know, the most NBA player ready. He has really shown just that he's average and under muscled.
Yes.
You know, he's frail.
He's very skinny. So,
and that it's just, well, he's not, you know, he's not that dominant. This year's draft class has just sort of been terrible.
Yes. Once you get past Embiid and Saric, yes, but we still have, I got to say this. I heard it's not Saric, it's Saric. Is that – I don't know if that's exactly accurate, but from what I'm –
No, because if it were Saric, there'd be a little accent over the S.
Yeah, that's what somebody was talking about, is that I always have to say Saric. I'm like, I thought it was Saric. Like, that's the way I always heard it. Saric is good. Okay, regardless of how you say his name, but Embiid is number one with a bullet. But we're gonna talk about
one, but he's also again he's been in the NBA for 3 years.
Yeah, we're gonna get to Sixers in a sec.
Yeah. So that's this year's players who were drafted this year, straight rookies, very overwhelmingly disappointing. Memphis,
A-, just because of the MASH unit being able to hold them up when Marcus Gasol. When Mike Conley was out with the back injury and Chandler Parsons was still coming back from the knee injury. Parsons is back. Conley is back. Marcus Gasol and Conley are both having their best seasons individually as offensive players. Defensively, took a slight dip, even though they're still very effective. They're not as much as grit and grind as they used to be, but they're still pretty good. Their clutch play is excellent. It's beyond good. Like, if a game is close, the Grizzlies are going to take the game. It's almost to that point where you're super confident that they're going to take that game. They're right there in the playoff hunt in the West. They have a playoff spot right in their grasp right now. I kind of wonder how Parsons is going to fit in. He's very slowly gotten himself back into the thick of it, even though he's not all the way there. No one would expect him to with so many knee problems he's had, despite how much money you paid to get him. But it's still a really good team. Zach Randolph has embraced that six-man role. I like them more, actually, than I did last year.
That, the thing about Mike Conley is he is, oh, yeah, he's the highest-paid NBA player, and, he's the max contract guy, and he is having a career year where, if I'm not mistaken, he's, career highs in all across the board.
18 points, 3.7 rebounds, which might be not his career high. 6 assists, which is right there. 1.3 steals, 41% from the 3-point line, and he's making 2.3 3-pointers made. The biggest one is he's averaging 4 free throws made a game. He's like an attacker now. So
yeah, it's just all of a sudden out of nowhere he has decided to play. And Fizdale, it was one of those maybe a coaching change. You needed a change of scenery.
Mm-hmm.
Where he, he proceeded to take off, and everybody is embracing the Fizdale era. And
do you embrace the idea of when James Ennis is back from injury, unless he's already back, to keep him as the starter and have Parsons be the spark plug off the bench, along with Randolph?
No.
Like maybe bring in Randolph and Parsons together after the Ennis Jamichael.
See, the problem is if you're having Ennis and Jamichael Green together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just sort of a big dip right there.
But you got Gasol in that 5 spot to anchor the front court, and you got
You got Gasol, and then who's your 2 is Tony Allen. So it's just really you just have Gasol and Connolly in defense.
Yeah,
so that's
Trick or Tony's not first team all defense anymore, but he's still second team all defense. He's still pretty effective.
Yeah, especially for his age, and he's put together a nice career for himself.
Yes, so we both like Grizzlies.
Yes, Miami.
I got to give them a D just because of how poorly they played. They have been competitive more often than you would expect, but I thought more out of them. The Chris Bosh mystery behind it all until training camp opened, and we realized that Bosh's career was probably over unless he is able to get out of medical retirement by signing with another team when he's waived. That really just stymied everything. The expectations that – whatever expectations the Heat had going into that training camp absolutely bottomed out. So it depends on your level of expectation. For me, I still just look at how good is the team, and that team is a bad team. I know Goran Dragic has had a pretty good year, but the Justice Winslow injury hurt them a lot. It made them rely more on Josh Richardson as one of their youth guys. Deion Waiters, they rely on way too much. It almost feels like a tank job, even though it's really not. But I still got to give him a D because they've just been so bad.
Yeah, I had to give him a D. I've always tried to defend them for some unknown reason now, saying, they didn't plan the Bosh.
Well, I think it's because Spoelstra makes them fight.
It's the, the PR battle. They get pure Fs, and you replace the $20 million of Dwayne Wade's salary with absolutely nothing. Derek Williams is a sporadic player. I haven't seen him injured. They decided not to play him.
The only one that's really worked out from that collateral they used was James Johnson. That's the only one that's really.
And he's just mediocre at best. Deion Waiters terrible, and you could only rely on the Sioux Falls Sky Force for so long to prop up your team.
Didn't Hassan come out of there? Whiteside, who's had a great – Hassan Whiteside's had a fantastic year, you know.
He's had a fantastic year. Dragic has had a not good year.
Well, and he had those two games against the Rockets and another team just recently where he was out of sight. Every now and then, Dragic will have one of those 30-point games he'll drop on you, and you're like, oh, yeah, he is still good. But can he be used as a trade asset at this point, or would you just keep him?
In a rebuilding mode, I would just trade him. He's 30 years old, and you could get – if you're going to develop your team for a team that doesn't have draft picks or really – much of a roster going on. Again, you had to pay a ton of money for Tyler Johnson because, well, we didn't have anything behind him.
And here's the thing, too, that makes it complicated. Tyler Johnson has one of those Gilbert Arenas provision back-end contracts where it really goes up after year two. So it's one of those things where if you're going to get a good player in free agency or through a trade, you might want to do it now. If you don't want to do it now, you're better off just sort of staying bad and getting a good draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gets right. complicated, though.
Yes, yes. So now the floor is yours.
New Orleans Pelicans?
Go ahead.
Oh, man. I'd give him a C-. I was really wanting to give him a D, but that little stretch when Drew Holiday came back where they improved vastly on the defensive end has been a real helpful thing for them. Defensively, they're a lot better than people expected. Anthony Davis is a star, all-star starter in the West, just doing fantastic. The signings that they have had outside of Langston Galloway and Tim Frazier have been disastrous. Solomon Hill is probably the worst starting three in the league. I can't stand even watching him play. He's so bad. Just a complete bust as a signing. And we gave him $13 million a year, I want to say, maybe 12. Like, just a total disaster. But they do – in the games where – AD is playing well and their guard play is not absolutely atrocious, they have actually been really competitive in some of these games. They're not good enough to beat good teams, but they're good enough to beat mediocre teams. That might still be enough to get that last playoff slot, which is like the death spot if you want to get killed by the Warriors in the first round. So I feel bad for AD, but I still got to give him C-. Just because of that little stretch that got him back in the hunt of it when Drew Holiday came back.
So how long till Anthony Davis becomes a Carmelo /
DeMarcus
situation?
Oh, please don't say that. I've already read the articles about that for the last 2 months. Oh, time's running out for the Pelicans. It's like, he just signed the contract. But that's already the urgency kicking in of, oh, this is a superstar player. He's reaching his prime. You got to make him happy. If you don't make him happy, he's going to – it's the LaMarcus – I call it the LaMarcus Aldridge dilemma because this is what happened to Aldridge in Portland. Like, it's like, okay, you got to make this team good. Well, guess what? The team did get good in Portland, and LaMarcus left anyway. So what's the point of trying to get better? You know, you only want to get better just for your own, like, selfishness.
Yeah, but the team just doesn't really have much going on. Etuan Moore has been a decent signing. Tim Frazier, he's been okay.
Had Lexi a triple-double. Galloway. He got a triple-double.
He's okay, but, yeah. You know, Solomon Hill, terrible signing. Omar Asik doesn't even dress
him, him and Ashinka,
anymore.
Who is, like, garbage. I just saw him on Shaq and a Fool picking up his dribble in the half court on a fast break. Just awful, awful. Trying to think of some of the other guys. Tyreek Evans is just came back. He's like,
well, that's the thing is you see Tyreek and Drew Holiday come back. The team just played really. They played there. It was just like night and day. All of a sudden, Drew Holiday comes back. The team's good.
Yeah, Buddy Hield's played well. You know,
Buddy Hield has peaked as being just the spot
Terrence
up
Jones has been one of our better signings. You know, got a lot more out of him than I expected. Had some bad breaks, like always, because it's Oxner, which is, you know, which is the Pelicans' nickname, you know, because of their infirmary unit. You know, Dante Cunningham broke his leg. Lance Stevenson got injured, so they had to waive him. They picked up Donatas Montiunas, who is like a walking back injury, so we don't know what to expect from him. You know, anything but Solomon Hill is better, so maybe Montiunas will provide something. But, oh, weird team. But, yeah, I got to give him a C-. You know, just below average. Just below average.
All right. I would just, you know, I gave him C+.
Okay.
Super low B- maybe, because they are more competitive than they should be. It's just there's not much you could do if that team was just made out of glass.
Yeah, I mean, and the medical thing has always been an issue. I mean, I remember the interview that Eric Gordon had right before they played the Pelicans. That was the game where they like made the they made like what 39 threes or 33 three-pointers. It was like a regular season record for made threes in a game. And Eric Gordon basically put a lot of shade on the training staff for the Pelicans and how they managed him really poorly. And he's sort of like hinted at the fact that strongly hinted at the fact that he was happy to get away from him. So maybe it is the medical staff for the Pelicans. We always hear about how the Suns have a great training staff. So
there might be something to that.
Yeah. Everybody
who goes there just mysteriously bam out for the year.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get depressing again. New York.
New York Knicks, F. I can't even give him an F+, just straight F. I don't even want to talk about him. Derrick Rose, every now and then, is a fantastic game when he's not MIA for no particular reason. Like, he'll literally be MIA in a game. Like, he had the situation where he just went missing for like a day, and it turned out he went back to Chicago to be with his mom. Still never got an explanation, even though I don't think he's going to be open to giving an explanation, you know, since it was a personal matter, quote unquote. But anyways, Porzingis is the best player. Carmelo Anthony is not the best player. There is some kind of schism there. Not necessarily that Carmelo is blaming Porzingis. It's that Carmelo still wants to be considered the top dog down the stretch of games, but he can't make game-winning shots anymore.
Yeah, but...
They're there.
Derrick Rose
they're there.
Isn't,
you know.
You made the trade hoping Derrick Rose can be his all-star self. Mm-hmm. And he's not. You signed Brandon Jennings, who the wheels just fell off on him.
Yeah.
He was good, you know, he was good in Milwaukee. He was, you know, I was more impressed with him in Detroit than you were, but he was solid there. Orlando is just a toxic dump.
Yeah.
And then you know they sign him. They gut their bench for Noah, which is single-handedly.
That might be the worst contract in the NBA.
That's the front runner right now for Omar Ashik is off the hook. Tyson Chandler is off the hook.
With new money, you can kind of reevaluate. Is it fair to take an older contract and reevaluate it with the new equation and say, well, that's not so bad a contract after all? Or you have to take it in context.
Well, you can take it in context, but at the same time, it's a roster spot. So you can't have that young guy because you have this old center you can't get rid of, this 33-year-old who's there for 3 years.
The only thing the Knicks excel at is team rebounding. You know, maybe Noah provides a little bit of that. But, you know, I also give a lot of credit to Porzingis because Porzingis is a stretch five and he's so versatile that he can be like a cleanup rebounder, get offensive rebounds and put back.
Porzingis, Kuzminskis, signed out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. He looked pretty decent. So in the New York International scan, they got him. They got Mozgov out of nowhere, and he's had a fairly decent career. And the Willie Hernan Gomez?
Yeah, that's the big Hernan Gomez, not Juancho. Juancho's
in small doses, these two guys look like good prospects, which I don't think we've said New York prospect any time in the past decade, really.
Yes.
It's just they've never had anybody young. It's just well,
and then there's all
better.
That Phil Jackson stuff of like, well, you know, is Carmelo going to talk with him, have this conversation? Will he take his trade kicker out so that he can move on if it feels like the team is back in rebuilding mode and all this stuff? Had the weird moment against the Wizards where Sidney Lowe, the assistant coach for the Wizards, yelled out something to Courtney Lee to make him think there was going to be a double closeout when there wasn't, which just to me sounded like sour grapes. It's like, hey dude, you should know that somebody is yelling behind you, not in front of you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't just blame an assistant coach for ruining a play, even though Lowe did get fined for that.
Well, he was in the court. There's really no need for him to be there. It was strange overall.
Yes.
And above all of this, can we sort of admit that Hornacek isn't that good of a coach?
True. I think he's good when he has good guards. The problem is he doesn't have good guards. That's the problem. I think it really worked in Phoenix when he had good guard play. You know,
Courtney Lee, I think he's shooting 40% from three. It's just he's not good. You know, he just – it's one of those people like, yeah, he shoots well, but he's not, you know. doing anything else.
We got one team we have to retread on because I think we missed them on the alphabeticals, the Milwaukee Bucks. Do you have a grade for the Milwaukee Bucks?
I missed a couple of teams. I just went straight to New Orleans.
That's what I just straight up noticed. You got a grade for them?
Milwaukee, I gave a B.
A B.
Because they're back to being competitive. It's just...
Now, they've lost 5 games in a row.
Well, yeah, but they were supposed to be completely helpless again this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Antetokounmpo is, you know, worthy of his all-star start and just amazing at everything. And Tony Snell has fit in very well with this team.
Yeah, Matthew Dellavedova, I think people think that Dellavedova hasn't worked out because he doesn't start at point guard now, that Malcolm Brogdon as a rookie has been really good, but Dellavedova is still, to me, valuable. The Greg Monroe thing is still weird, because I say, the whole thing that makes Milwaukee work is their versatility, their ability to switch positions, and Greg Monroe is like the opposite of that. He's like the traditional big man post-up guy, so it doesn't always work unless they have to go down low to get some points in the paint, which Monroe can still provide. But Antetokounmpo is so good. Jabari Parker is a great sidekick for him. And their field goal percentage is very, very high offensively. They're much improved. Defense is where I worry about Milwaukee because their versatility was supposed to lend to their defense, and it hasn't.
Yeah, that's because again they were supposed to be, mm-hmm. you know, this was they're done, but they got Chris Middleton coming back, which will obviously change the dynamic yet again because
yes,
who knows what he'll be? Maybe he'll be the starting center on this weird team.
Yeah, the other one is Minnesota. We've talked about Minnesota ad nauseum on the show. I'd give him just a D plus. Would you?
I gave him just a solid D because they are just god awful.
Yeah, I don't want to go too far with him. Carl Towns is awesome. Even though defensively he has not really made that move yet to be an elite defender, neither has Andrew Wiggins, which is a surprise because that was supposed to be one of his attractive traits as a draft prospect that he was going to be able to.
Yeah, these are all things we said. So just quick question that we haven't mentioned on them. What's the best spot for Ricky Rubio to be traded to? Just off the top of your head, if it was just a straight up deal and you're just swapping point guards, we're not talking about salary, where would his best fit be right now?
You know, I thought about this the other day and when they were doing trade talk on television, and I'm trying to remember the team, but I think the best spot would probably be Sacramento. I think Sacramento, he could work out well.
Okay.
Was that a little bit out of nowhere?
No, there's really no right answer.
I'm trying to think of Sacramento as one.
I think Sacramento has no outside shooting, period, and him just you have no shooting whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean maybe Orlando. That's another one I heard, but they're a terrible shooting team anyway. So maybe they'll just double down and say, well, we'll still be a bad shooting team, but we'll actually have a true point guard instead of Elfrid Payton, who's not a point guard in the least bit. You know.
I would say his best spot would be Milwaukee.
Okay.
On such a weird team, you don't need him to shoot. You just need him to get the ball where it needs to be.
Yes.
Like, with Sacramento, I'm like, well, you know, McLemore is out of the lineup now, and Rudy Gay's out, so you have no... All you could do is just pass to Cousins, which he'd be like, that's great.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
yeah, I would just... No problem. Like with such a fluid team with nobody with positions, mm-hmm. you could just have somebody who's just, I'll just pass it to you. I don't need to shoot because, you know, anybody can just be the slasher on the team who's not Greg Monroe.
Yes. Okay. Before we had the detour with the M's, we're going into the O's. So Oklahoma City. Okay. I give them a B-. I think they've been better than people thought, but they obviously have like gaping deficiencies in terms of how good they are once Russell Westbrook sort of takes whatever time off the court he has, you know, on the bench, you know, just to rest. And they're god awful without him, you know, in real plus minus. He's just like, he's the most important thing that Oklahoma City has. Russell Westbrook's averaging a triple double still fantastic. he's hyper competitive, which sort of lends to the attitude of the team. I feel like the team does play with a little bit of fire, even when Russell Westbrook's not playing great. Steven Adams, not taking the jump yet, but he's getting close. I still like him. Victor Oladipo playing a little better. Again, not taking the jump yet, but just a decent team. You know, just a decent team that in this I wouldn't go past the second round of the playoffs.
It's just Westbrook wills him to a solid B. Without him, that team would just be a D.
Yeah.
You know, I guess one of the Ibaka was the odd man out, but you know, Sabonis and Roberson playing them together doesn't really. It just creates this big hole. And you know, Oladipo didn't replace Durant, but you're not going to have somebody who's going to replace.
Yeah, it's impossible. Yeah, it's impossible.
Yeah, and it's just well, once you start looking at the bench, it's like okay, you have Cantor and. You know, you like Alex Abrinas.
He's basically.
But outside of that, it's
well,
just.
Well, I'm glad that he's pushed Anthony Morrow out because I'm just tired of hearing about Anthony Morrow every year. You know, it's like, oh, watch out for Anthony Morrow. He can make threes. It's like, no, he can't anymore. You know, we need to move on from this. So.
Yeah, it's just outside of those two, it's just you don't really have much depth on that team right now. And it's just, you just have Westbrook, like you said, just willing it through.
Here's an interesting one. The Jeremy Grant Ersan Ilyasova trade with Philadelphia, which one worked out? Who did it work out for better?
Well, Ilyasova, I think, is the most underrated player in the NBA.
Oh, wow.
And always has been, just undervalued. I wouldn't say underrated, undervalued.
Yes, he's always taken for granted because he had that one bad three-point field goal percentage season where people are like, oh, he's resting on his contract now. He doesn't want to play anymore. So.
And it's just everywhere he goes, the team is just seems to be better with him. And then he's just a solid. He's been a solid player in his career. Whereas Jeremy Grant's just you know he's another.
Well, he was a good energy guy for them, and that's.
But he's interchangeable. He's forgettable, I would say.
Oh, good. All right, we got another O.
Orlando.
Bad team, predictably bad, just a mishmash there with Ibaka, Biombo. We didn't know how the lineups would work. We thought there was some defensive improvement to be had now that you have two shot blockers. Ibaka as a shot blocker is coming back to where he used to be, even though he's not as effective as he was when he was younger at Oklahoma City. Biombo is like an automatic shot blocker rebounder guy, but they don't, you know, they haven't figured out a rotation yet. It's still kind of out there. Evan Fournier went out with an injury. He's been their best offensive player by far. Without him, I don't know what they can do offensively in the backcourt. You know, that's a huge problem. Elfrid Payton is a mess. I don't know if he'll even be on the team by the end of the season. He might be traded. So, and then I'm trying to think of some other things. The Jeff Green experiment is a predictable failure. Jody Meeks has played better than people expected.
Aaron Gordon can't get out of the three. They just keep sticking.
The Aaron Gordon thing still drives people nuts that they don't run him as a pick and roll power forward. Like, people just can't stand that.
The GM gets a straight F, and Hennigan has ruined that team. And
yeah.
You try to, okay, Dwight Howard leaves, let's build it up. Okay, we have all this talent, people are excited, and then it was just continue to make one shit deal after the next. And
yeah,
the fact Vogel has sort of mishmashed his team to 18 wins,
well, I don't want to say it's well impressive, for a week, but... And then they have an awful following week, you know? He can't sustain it.
That's the thing, yeah, and it's just that's just because you have a bad roster built for him. Mm-hmm. And none of those players just make sense. And, you know, well, we need more centers. Let's have, but don't you have a good one in Vucevic? Nah, we're just gonna relegate him to the bench and we want to get rid of him.
And he still averages 10 rebounds a game. You know, I mean, he's still a very effective. Like, do you feel like they've sort of compromised his scoring, or do you think Vucevic being a 20 to 18 point per game scorer was sort of like overdoing his efficiency, like taking his efficiency into account, like I don't want to call it like a Solomon Hill problem, but like taking a guy's metrics and saying, oh, okay, well, we need to like give him way more minutes than he probably should have, you know?
I don't, because he was he was in the All-Star conversation last year.
True.
If you don't forget, it's just one of those. I need to re-sign Ibaka to a max deal because I traded for him and I gave a shit ton of money to Biombo.
Yeah.
You're going to play these guys.
And the reason the Fournier injury is a real concern, depending on how long he's out, he might even be back. I haven't followed their news wire lately, is that after that is Jeff Green, and behind Jeff Green is frickin' Mario Azonia, who's just a bust. So,
is he a bust, or it's just one of those we don't
bad
know
fit things?
Yeah, I think I just might be a bad fit with, like, the same as Satoransky in Washington. Because I watched him, I was like, yeah, he's not a point guard, and they're trying to,
yeah,
you know, they're trying to put him in. It's like Hazania. It's like, well, he's more of like a small four, but nope, we need to play him as a two, where he's.
Yeah, watch him get traded. Watch him get traded in San Antonio for pennies on the dollar and become a star. Watch. That's how it always works. So,
Philly.
Oh, A plus.
Because one player came back and is
because
good?
They're way better than they ever were in the last three seasons. Way better.
That doesn't say much. If you're battling to be the worst team of all time for the past three seasons, come in.
Well, you know, I'm kind of contradicting myself because I said in the beginning when I was talking about one of the teams is that, you know, you just got to look at the team itself. Not necessarily the improvement from previous seasons and not use that as a grade curve. But for this case, I am, because they were so ruggedly bad, you know, for the last few years. And now you have a little bit of, like, injection of energy thanks to Joel Embiid, you know, Dario Saric, I don't know, whatever, playing fairly well. We still have yet to see Ben Simmons. There's word that he's already done, like, shoot-arounds, five-on-nones. So we'll see if he comes back, like, in late January. One rumor I heard is that they flexed a game on ESPN so that Philly plays on ESPN, and that's, like, at the end of January. What do you think there's any chance we'll see Ben Simmons by the time we come back?
With Philly, who knows? It's just, you know, I gave them a B because, you know, Embiid is good. But, you know, continued, you sort of ruined Noel and Okafor and Saric. Oh, well, he's good, yeah, but he can't start with that anywhere in that lineup. And he's going to always have to be relegated to 27 minutes a game because there's now no room on the court for him. There's too many big men.
Yeah, and the lineup with Noel has played really, really well. I think it's the lineup with Ilyasova and Robert Covington, you know, and Embiid. They played very, very well.
Yeah, so they also get incomplete because they need to do something. You can't just be, well, we need to keep hoarding picks because this is what happens now. Now you're having too many people in there. And
well, they're going to go after a guard. I mean, it's going to be Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, De'Aaron Fox. It's going to be one of those guys. I mean, it's a guarantee, you know.
Yeah, and then we're going to see how good they are until a couple years when you start having to max out these people, and then there's no room at the end for the rest of them.
Yeah, so you think I'm being a bit of a prisoner of the moment with the game winners, like the T.J. McConnell game winner against the Knicks and the Robert Covington game winning three against.
Yes, you know, you're riding the 7-3 wave they're on.
The 7-3 wave, but that is a giant wave compared to the rest. Like, have they ever had a winning stretch for longer than maybe three or four?
That's
games?
Why. Well, they're better than the past 3 years. Well, yeah, if you're going for worst teams of all time, they have three of the top five.
Yes.
So,
well, there's optimism. If I had to go on my, if I had to be super duper stickler, I'd still give him an A-.
Okay, so let's ride the optimism train for a little bit, shall we?
Okay.
Phoenix.
Man, can I just give them a meh? Like an MEH?
Okay.
Like
that's a solid meh from you.
Like that.
I think that sort of
like,
can.
What's meh in scholastic terms? Is that a C?
C-.
A C-. Yeah.
Was you pass, but we're totally not impressed with you.
Yeah, I mean, Devin Booker played fairly well. We talked about how well he played in Mexico City. You know, he's
Devin
sort of
Booker's
emerged as their
well,
star
but,
player, you know?
You know, you have him, the Brandon Knight thing we've mentioned, and then the blatant tank job. Well, we're going to start Chris, who just looks
God,
completely
awful.
Lost out
Rocky
there.
Rocky Bender can't get on the floor, you know?
Yeah, Bender can't get on the floor. You're playing Tyson Chandler because, well, we paid him. We have to do something with him. They have no essential small forward on that team. Warren has just been invisible.
Yeah. Alex Len, what's the chances he gets matched as an RFA?
Gets mashed or maxed?
Matched.
I would say possibly pretty good.
Okay.
Because depending upon what deal he gets, because he is the old school center in a new school basketball, so he's not going to get his offers aren't going to be overwhelming. So it might be cheap for Phoenix to match him.
Well, if there's no, well, this is a Tyler Zeller problem where if you don't get a good offer, then you just take the deal that's on the table, like the Celtics gave Tyler Zeller, you know?
Yeah, well, that was just the we need the flexibility, so we're going to give you $8 million just to...
Yeah, the as we call it, as Danny LaRue on his show calls it, the Nene test. How tradable is a contract that you sign up? And that's what Tyler Zeller was. We can trade this contract down the road.
Yeah, and, you know, like we just sort of mentioned with them, it's just, you know, Alex Lenwell, he's playing 20 minutes, but Chandler's playing 28 minutes. You have, you know, Jared Dudley and TJ Warren are splitting minutes at the three, and PJ Tucker's in there, and it's just...
It's weird.
Well, none of those guys are super exciting. Yeah, we like Chris and we like Bender, but they're the exact same position. It was the same thing the Clippers did back when they had... Melvin Eli and Chris Wilcox. Everybody got excited until you drafted the next guy who plays the exact same position.
Yes, I remember that. That was in 2003 and 4 when Mike Dunleavy just got there.
It was just like, well, they're going to trade that pick, right? And they're going to do we're going to keep them both. Why? We could play them together.
About teams that are like, well, they need to be wary about tanking or trying to get a no. I'll say this for Phoenix, tank. Please tank. You need
this a- is a, I think it's a blatant tank job by but them. They're just not.
That's the problem. They need to.
They need to, but the problem is the draft isn't conducive to them doing it right now.
I agree. We got two more to go, a P and an S. Wait, no, I'm wrong. There's a couple more.
Portland.
Yeah, I'm wrong. There's a few more. Portland. Oh, man. I'd give him a D minus. I mean, I've been very disappointed with the Portland Trail Blazers. Some people now, say that the expectations were not reasonable because they basically doubled down on the core roster that they had, and the core roster was not good enough to be a competitive Western Conference team. But this is the team you have, and you have not played very well. Your defense is garbage, you know?
Here, this is a curious case of Scalabissiere question for you.
Okay.
Is this team doomed because Festus Ezeli was injured all year?
No, they were doomed when they signed Evan Turner.
But as a sixth man for Turner, as a little, you know, spark plug off the bench and something, is the fact that there is no Festus, you have really no, you're relying on Plumlee and...
I get what you're saying, that you just don't have the size.
Al Farouk Aminu and Mo Harkless are forced to play, and neither of them are scorers, and they're god-awful on big-man defense because of that reason.
Here's the other problem, is that you can't use Mason Plumlee as, like, your tentpole defensive rim protector guy because he's such a good offensive center with his assists that you don't want to get him into foul trouble and make him tentative in the front court. So you basically have to play him away. Here's the other problem. Your other center's Myers Leonard. He's a shooter. So you don't have a room protector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Noah Vonleh still looks lost.
Yeah, he's never going to be what people want him to be, unfortunately. And the problem with Plumlee is, guess what? You got a big offer sheet coming. Do you match it like you did with Alan Crabb and go well into the tax? Or you sort of try to trade some contracts if possible, you know, after the CJ McCollum extension kicks in, and see if you can kind of get some flexibility. It's going to be very, very hard for Portland. Here's the thing. As hard as it has seemed for Portland right now, it's going to get even worse next year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but, I mean, offensively, Damian Lillard had a great year. CJ McCollum has really been, like, the backbone of their offense, especially when Lillard was out. Now, when Lillard was out, they lost almost all the games. They were terrible without him. So it just shows how much they rely on their backcourt. Crabb has actually played okay. Is he worth the contract that they matched him for from Brooklyn? I don't know about that. That was like a $15 million per year contract, you know?
No, that he isn't worth it. And for the same token, maybe Brooklyn's a little better because we mentioned Kilpatrick and LeVert and Whitehead all play two and Hollis Jefferson.
Yes.
That would take minutes from all those guys.
And also, just the fact that Aminu – here's the thing. People are like, well, Aminu is so valuable – Al-Farouq Aminu was so valuable to Portland because when he went out with the injury, the defense was so bad. I'm like, no, that's bad. When a role player – like a designated role player is that important to your defense, that is a huge red flag that you're not going to get any better on the defensive end, you know.
And speaking of bad teams, Sacramento.
I actually give – you know what? I'll be nice to them. I'll give them a C just because they've been somewhat competitive, and Cousins has had a career year. I mean, he's had career years last two seasons, but this season he's been out of sight offensively.
Oh, he's had a career year, but I'm still giving him a straight D.
Okay.
You know, the Rudy Gay thing, you can't plan for that. The team is doomed without him.
Their guard play is so fucking
good. McLemore has now gotten straight. I don't think he's injured, but he's now out of the rotation.
He's out. Now they're forced to because of the Rudy Gay injury, unless Dave Joerger goes to an old reliable from his Memphis days and he starts Matt Barnes, who's also tight with Cousins. So maybe that's the way to go.
And, you know, Ty Lawson hasn't been the comeback player he said he would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those, you know, I see Malachi Richardson's getting more minutes than McLemore.
One guy that's been a bright spot is Garrett Temple, coming from Washington. He's actually played a lot better than people expect.
But he's not supposed to be anything other than, like, the eighth man. And that's sort of the problem is you have these players who... You know, and like I said, it just comes down to McLemore, which I think we're both bitter because we both picked him for our fantasy draft. And
yeah,
you know, a team's offering a first rounder from like, no, he's turned this corner. He's our guy now. And
I did like the philosophy. One philosophy Vlade Divac had, the GM, is that let's just go with size. The one way we can beat this is to just go with size. You know, and so they stacked up on a lot of bigger guys. They drafted Willie Cauley-Stein the year before. They got Georges Papianis. They signed Costa Kufos. But the problem is none of them have been terribly effective. That's
the problem is Cauley-Stein is now out of the lineup. Papianis isn't even doing well in the D League, which I didn't expect him to because I think it might be a conditioning thing since he's like he was
yeah,
like what,
here's 7'2"? The thing. If you're gonna get bigs, get a lot. You better get good ones. You know.
And that's probably a good thing is that they have a D-League team where they could send them like, look, just for a year, just run up and down the court for a year because we know you're not used to it in Europe.
Yes.
So, you know, develop sort of, you know,
what's
develop
the,
a healthy
What's the name
regimen.
Of the D-League team? I'm curious.
The Reno Bighorns.
The Reno Bighorns.
Aren't they?
Okay, yeah, you're right. That was probably the one that Whiteside was on before he was cut by the Kings.
Yes.
Okay. Now I'm remembering. Now it's all come back to me now. Celine Dion once said.
And, you know, LeBissiere is not playing. It's just you have this roster and Jurger's coming in. It's like, well, I need to play these veterans. And it's just like, well, again,
are they the least talented team in the NBA once you get past the star player? Or would you go with.
They have a star player.
But what I'm saying is that once you get past the star player, like
yeah, but I'm saying there are teams that don't have that star player.
Yes, I agree.
Look at Denver. Denver doesn't even have that star player, so that's why Sacramento. Well, you still have Cousins, who's a cornerstone. Denver can't develop it. Minnesota thinks they have one, and Towns is one question mark, and
it's tough.
Know.
It's tough.
It wasn't as – it was an explanation point at the beginning of the year. Towns is a new thing. He's going to be the best player in the NBA, and all of a sudden –
I'll say this. Cousins is way better defensively than Towns. I know some people would say that Cousins' defensive efficiency is not very good, but it's better than Towns's. It's still not as good as AD's. AD's is the best of the three.
Yes. So, okay, just quickly, Toronto and San Antonio, how do they both not get A's?
I'd give Toronto an A+, and I would give San Antonio a straight A. Is that fair?
Yeah, they both
get
the A.
Maybe the fact that I don't go all the way with San Antonio shows that I just take Popovich for granted, which a lot of people do. You know, because, you know, you lose Tim Duncan. You had a lot of changeover where you brought in some young guys to sort of play more minutes, like Jonathan Simmons, Dwayne Dedman, Kyle Anderson. Who did you see the incident where he ran into Pau Gasol and broke his hand? What a weird, weird thing. So they played one game without – or two games without Gasol because you have to count the game where he was in the warm-ups but didn't play because of the injury. They won both games. They beat Cleveland in the first Saturday night primetime ABC game in overtime. Kawhi Leonard had his career high with 41 points. He's had a streak where he's had 30 points or more. It's the first time since Tim Duncan like way back in like a decade ago. So he's becoming that go-to scorer that a lot of people kind of questioned if he could ever become. But there he is, Kawhi Leonard, go-to scorer. So, yeah, San Antonio is fantastic. Their defense is still really, really good. Their real plus-minus as a team is like in the top. It's like I think the only one who's better than them is the Warriors. Just an excellent, excellent team.
Yes, and that's again we expected. Okay, Duncan's gone. This team's now too old. They get Gasol is just too old, and everybody else. But nope, they're still up there, and Toronto still. This is
their offense.
They're one dimensional. They can't do anything. And
yeah,
so Utah also in the A.
Yeah, A, straight A. You know, because they had that very small stretch where they didn't have Gordon Hayward because he had the broken hand in the preseason. Played very well without him. When he came in, that was the missing piece. Then they had the issue with Favors, you know, injuries galore, you know, that they had to overcome. Now they got Rodney Hood that was out. Rudy Gobert has been fantastic. Their defense is by far the best in the league, even better than the Spurs. Offensively, much improved. They make more threes than they used to. They're still a young team, but, I mean, a firm playoff team. I'll ask you this to finish up. Will they take the Clippers spot in the four seed?
I think so. I think the Clippers are going to try to rest Paul to the playoffs.
I think that's the most trying scenario.
Let's just give Blake extra rest, and they know they can make the playoffs. And the problem I think Utah has is sort of a minutes crunch because they've had a lot of periods where at least one guy hasn't been healthy. But when everybody comes back, it's like, well, how are we going to fit them all in?
My theory here is this. I think Doc might play like lay low if they don't get that four seed because they're confident that if they play Utah, even without home court advantage, they can still take it from them and win the series. So I think yeah, five is like the lowest that the Clippers.
It also comes through. It's like, well, do you want to go through San Antonio and Houston, or do you want to just go through Golden State?
I would rather try to cut off the head of the beast. I'd rather play Golden State because you got to play them anyway.
Yeah, that's sort of the thing. It's like, well, if we're gonna have to play them, who cares if we get a home court advantage for the first round? Now the curious case of they came from nowhere, Washington.
Washington. I want to give them a D and a B. Because the beginning of the season, they were so awful. And then they've really picked it up in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I know you don't like him because you saw him firsthand and thought he was garbage. But Kelly Oubre being in the lineup has been so good for them. Like, let me ask you this. They have two lineups that they really rely on. They have the one with Wall, Beal, Otto Porter Jr., who's been really good in a contract year, Markieff Morris, and Gortat. But the one with Oubre in place of Morris at the four has been just as effective plus-minus-wise as a lineup. Which one do you like more?
Oubre is just – he's – I don't know. You're higher on him than me. Mm-hmm. It's just he's not I don't know. The jury's still out on him in my book. It's just Otto Porter Jr., yes, we've mentioned how terrible he was the first 3 years, and now all of a sudden, well, he's now getting it.
Okay. Yeah, but it's a really good – I mean, John Wall, phenomenal. If he is – that when I was thinking of All-Star reserves when the stars were announced, like, okay, which one should make the All-Star game? I mean, Kyle Lowry and John Wall were like automatic – and Isaiah Thomas were like automatic. I was like, they need to be in. John Wall has been incredible.
Well, it was basically, could we start 4 point guards with LeBron?
Yes.
Kind of, you know, oh, yeah, we like Jimmy Butler, and we like, but no, it has to be Isaiah and Kyrie and John Wall. It's, you know, a point guard, East Coast resurgence almost.
And the only other one is the Russell Westbrook being a starter. Total atrocity.
Well, there's always going to be, with any sort of voting system, any sort of cutoff, every time every college playoffs, any NCAA tournament, somebody has to go. There's no reason I think both Isaiah and Westbrook should be out. DeRozan and, well, the West, who do you take out? The fans don't want it. You can't take out Curry.
I would have considered taking Curry out. I would have considered.
Yeah, the fans would not allow that, though.
Well, here's the problem. They changed the system so that the fan vote is 1/3. Now, I don't know
fan
how
vote was
they
half.
Didn't show. okay, but they didn't show the numbers of how much one skewed the other, you know?
The fan vote was half, but Curry led the entire
league in voting.
Curry and LeBron were the entire league.
In fan voting, so yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, and then, like, Isaiah Thomas, like, he lost on a tiebreaker to DeRozan. It's like, well, no.
Okay.
It's...
So we're wrapping up, but I want to try to get to this before, because I think the reserves will be announced by then. Let's just try to cut down our seven on the reserves. Westbrook in the West. Westbrook, yes.
Westbrook is obvious. Cousins is obvious.
Yes. Rudy Gobert.
Gobert is also obvious.
Blake Griffin injury might hurt him. Klay Thompson, yes.
Klay Thompson, most likely.
Marc
Gasol, I would say yes.
Okay, that's five. Now, CP3 would probably be selected as a reserve. But he'd
Chris Paul, yes.
But he's already a replacement, so you got to take him out. Damian Lillard, yes. And so that leaves us with one more.
I would say no on Lillard, because I think it comes down to him versus
Conley.
You claimed it was a left field pick. Was Conley.
Mike Conley, yes.
And I think they're going to replace Paul with Conley.
That's a really solid, but it's just one. There's always one of those second guess ones, and that might be one where you're like, really? Like, you know, Draymond Green is one that I second guess if he made the All-Star game.
I don't think he will, and based upon just... I don't want to say they're going to give a legacy pick to him, but I'd say give to Aldridge.
If Aldridge makes it, that would be like – I think a lot of people would be second-guessing.
A lot of people would groan, but it's like, well, who are you taking out? Oh, Draymond. Who's...
The East is much easier. John Wall, yes. Kyle Lowry, yes. Isaiah Thomas, the fourth quarter warrior, which is his new nickname, yes. Kevin Love, yes. Then you got three more spots, and I'm going to give you some names. Paul George.
Yes.
Kemba Walker.
Yes.
Oh, wow. You said that very begrudgingly. Paul.
No, that was a wholeheartedly yes. He should be in there. The only problem is.
Yes. Hassan Whiteside. I got to say no. Yeah, but I want to.
No. The problem is with the East is they're all point guards, and it's just, well.
He's the league in rebounding. His field goal percentage is ridiculous. I think he leads the team in scoring. He's been really good. Porzingis, I got to say no because of those games he missed with the Achilles.
I agree with him. The same thing with Embiid is probably going to be your next pick, which I can't.
I would go with Embiid, even though I would lose a bet that I had when my friend Norman Rockwell has been on the show, if he makes the All-Star game, which would piss me off so much. Dwayne Wade.
No, because this Wade, he's been – that's just sort of the legacy.
So
like,
for
let's
you,
just
you have
give
one more spot after Paul George, Kemba Walker, Kevin Love, Isaiah Thomas, Kyle Lowry, and John Wall. So who's the last one for you? Paul Millsap, Porzingis, Carmelo Anthony.
Millsap.
Okay. Which is solid. I agree with it. You know.
That's a solid.
I think Millsap and Embiid and Dwayne Wade will be fighting for the last spot.
But, you know, somebody who's on a minutes restriction and a game restriction, no. You can't just say you could play when you could play half the games and half of the games of half the games you play.
Yes.
Have that be.
Yeah.
Be.
Or you could just have White Embiid play in the Shining Stars thing, and he's like
the same thing.
The
I would say,
Stars.
You know, Gordon Hayward, if he didn't sit out, if he wasn't injured for the start of the season, so well, you need to. The whole thing is, you have to either be super transcendent when you come back, or you can't just, you know, he's have a good month and a half.
Yes. So, all right, and that's going to be wrapping up. Just very quickly, Super Bowl. Give me a not a prediction, even though I think
this is going to come out after it's over. All I'm going to say is if it's Pittsburgh and Atlanta, it's just going to be the battle of nobody's going to care.
Well, a lot of offense.
And from Pittsburgh?
Well, they got the killer bees. Do you like the fact first of all, they had the killer bees from Miami's days in the 80s, and then you have the wrestling killer bees. Like, is it fair to steal that killer bee nickname?
I think enough time has passed.
Are people worried in the New England and Boston area about the Pittsburgh game tonight?
No, everybody's expecting New England to win easily.
Oh, your typical Patriot overconfidence, thanks to Tommy.
That basically, yeah, the New England fans, the New York fans, were just unsufferable.
I never, ever in my life cheer for the Falcons, so of course I'm going to pick the Packers to win.
Yeah, it's just, oh, Packers, Patriots, Packers, Steelers, meh. Yeah. Patriots, Falcons,
And we got 2 weeks Patriot. To think about this whatever game it's going to be in the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 50, L-I, Super Bowl lie.
Yeah, it's about the only real storyline sort of there is, well, what would happen if the Patriots win? Goodell has to, you know, hand the trophy over.
Yeah, he already did. You know, that's the thing that makes me laugh. Like, well, I'd love to see him hand over there. Well, he already did. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but he has to do it again now after the suspensions and after his whole.
Yeah. Well, the same thing happened with David Stern and Mark Cuban. Oh, I can't wait to see what happens when David Stern hands the trophy to Mark Cuban. I don't think he even handed it over to him, you know?
Yeah, but the thing is, people like David Stern. Nobody likes Goodell. He has very – you never hear something like, oh, you know what? He's really doing a good job. It's just everything that's gone wrong is, well, it's under your watch and – most things going wrong is because of your, well, I'm just going to, you know, do what I feel like thing, cavalier attitude.
I'll say this. The Saturday night thing I'm still okay with, even though the repetitiveness of the rotation of teams is a little regurgitating. But the Monday TNT thing sort of bothers me. Like, I don't like that one.
I don't mind as much. It's just like you said. I don't want to see San Antonio, Chicago, New York. Mm-hmm. And, oh, we got to throw the Lakers on the late game. No, we don't want to see these teams. Stop showing us the same eight
teams.
Like,
I counted it. The Knicks are on TV 6 times in the next month until the end of February. That's disgusting. I'm sorry, but it's disgusting.
Yeah, I don't need to, you know, it's Houston versus San Antonio. No.
But... okay, but that's going to be wrapping up this one. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reach with this supersized episode, I guess you'd say, the NBA Team Podcast. Take care, everybody. We're going to see you in a few weeks. See you later.